Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the VHFBX podcast, a really cool edition of the show. Nick Langan with you, with my partner, Bryce Foster. We've got a fascinating guest who is really helping to introduce a really innovative product to the DX community at large, the TEF portable radios. Chef Verhoeven will join us from the Netherlands coming up to talk about the firmware. He has very much shepherded that has been so sensational for DXers. So we're really excited to have him on this March Saturday when we record this after the spring equinox. It's another washout here in the Northeast Mid-Atlantic. So what better way to spend a Saturday than recording a podcast? Bryce, how you doing? How's your late winter, early spring been there on Cape Cod?
Pretty good, you know, similar weather situation. It's very gray and dull and no real signs of spring yet, but I am finally recovered from the time change and ready for things to warm up and go back outside. But in the meantime, you know, here, looking forward to talking to our guest from the Netherlands. I've got my TEF in front of me
likewise.
I'm going to have to refer to. So yeah, we've both been on the TEF bandwagon. How exciting to have someone reach out and be involved in the creation of that as a FMDX receiver. So super stoked about that. And then I guess we do have a few pretty light today, as one would expect for a podcast looking at February and March DX conditions. But we have a few things, right? Nick, I think you you spotted a pretty cool piece of DX news from the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a repeat, you know, repeat admiration we give CE3SAD from Central Chile, who for the second consecutive year, he has a great YouTube feed. We'll post this particular catch in our show notes. But he received a 92.7 WEOW from the Florida Keys via the Trans Equatorial Propagation, TEP, from Central Chile at over 6,500 kilometers. I think that's roughly 4,200 miles. With his Sony XDR S1HD, I believe he uses a 7-element Yagi. Check out the clip. He had WMIA from Miami Beach last February. And just like that reception, what I find so fascinating is the signal, you know, it's not particularly strong, as you would expect, but it's very stable. So, you know, this is a propagation that obviously I've never experienced, but it very mysterious, just being able to capture that, and at an incredible distance. So, you know, this is something that during the wintertime months at that particular latitude, is possible. So, big shout out to CE3SAD on the 26th of February for getting 92.7 WEOW from the Keys via that TEP propagation. So at the top of the list, as far as what we've seen this past February and March, and then really other than that, Bryce, you know, I think as we've talked about, March probably the leanest DX month of the year. I will say I had a small, you know, bit of you know, awakening, a tropo opening on St. Patrick's Day morning that I observed. Well, actually, my autologger observed. I was sleeping through it. You know, it was about 6 or 7 in the morning, but some North Carolina, Virginia stations. That was for the time of year, I would say, was fairly notable. Because I think I've mentioned, you know, March, very little tropo usually. So I found that interesting. And then on our on the W Logger, couple reports, you know, this is definitely when the Gulf of Mexico aided Tropo. This can be prime time. We saw Chris Dune down there with a couple of logs. I believe Ryan Grabeau, in Florida
Florida.
as well. Exactly. And Josh in Mountain Home, Arkansas. He had KRB from Houston. That's about 500 miles earlier in March. Things just starting to wake up. You know, overall a dearth of reports. But what you would expect for the month of March, and then the other noteworthy DX happening. We saw Matt in Palmdale, California, actually had some sporadic. He Chihuahua from Mexico, as well as I think Southern Texas. He had KROM from San Antonio. That was on the 6th of March. He had a little sporadic E flare up. Again, something I know the late Pat Dyer, WA5IYX, would see that same path in reverse this time of year. Not out of the ordinary, exactly what you would expect late February and March, but you know, more active times are almost upon us.
Perhaps a DX thaw from south to north. I always feel like these off season, I mean, obviously Tropo with the warmth of the waters, particularly in the Gulf and, you know, toward the Caribbean, Atlantic, and then TEP. I don't know what the season is for it, but I think that there's kind of roughly a peak in the springtime, and I want to say again in the fall, kind of maybe right around right now. So it makes sense that you know, TEP might be pushing its northern boundaries in the case of Miami for the gentleman in Chile. I believe his name is Felipe. So yeah, just maybe a good time to have the antenna pointed south, hoping for warm up or some openings drifting northward. But you know, we're at the end of March when we're recording and when you're probably listening, so it's not too far away that we can open up the season for real.
The next, you know, the next opening on the horizon, or the next episode on the horizon, Bryce, will be, you know, the season preview. It's coming up. You know, usually April, not a ton of sporadic E activity. Once in a while, we've seen it. I could reference a couple of years out of the old memory bank. But give it a month. You know, and I think everywhere it'll start to warm up. You know, get this is, you know, the time of year. I guess you know, we could conclude by saying here, you know, get your equipment, start to, you know, maybe get it out of mothballs, as they would say. Check the antenna connections. That's also something after a winter's worth of precipitation. Make sure your coax is in good shape. And then maybe, you know, maybe this is the time of the year. You ponder new equipment additions, SDRs, things of that nature, because you know, now is the time to probably get ready for the season ahead, and hopefully it will be a good one. We'll you know, theorize, proclamations, predictions, prognostications on the next
Yes.
episode. We have that to look forward to, Bryce.
Yes. And I also want to hear about your equipment additions and maybe anybody else out there who's planning on implementing cool equipment, whether it be radio hardware or antennas or anything like that. Drop us an email. Mention it one time this episode, vhfdxpodcast@gmail.com. Or if by some wild circumstance you actually had good DX over the last couple of months, tell us about it.
We want to know about it.
Absolutely. And we'll gather audio for the next next few months and maybe do another audio spotlight soon. So that's very good. But today we have a unique special privilege that we referenced here a moment ago of talking to a pioneer in the radio hardware side of the hobby, and something that we haven't had the chance to dive into deep in the show yet. So it is with much pleasure to break that drought of radio hardware talk, interviewing Chef Verhoeven from the Netherlands. And Chef, all of those around who have been using the TEF6686. Whether you know it or not, you're familiar with some of Chef's work. He is, I'm going to let him walk through exactly what he does with the TEF chipset, but he's involved in both the software and kind of the chip and the firmware, and a really exciting equipment related interview for us today. So Chef, good evening from the Netherlands.
Yeah, good evening to you.
How are you today?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you. Only, yeah, the weather could be better, but
the weather could be better. And Chef is gracious guest for us today, since it's quite a bit later at his location. So yeah, we'll give you a pass for staying up late for us. So thank you so much for joining us. So Chef, if you want to walk our listeners through a little bit about, you know, your background, your experience, and what you do with the TEF6686, and, you know, just kind of how we got here and what you do in the community.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I can tell you something small about myself. I'm 46 years old. For my profession, I'm a technical engineer for a CATV wholesaler and content provider. And as a hobbyist, I'm a ham radio operator. But also, I like designing electronics and writing software for it. If you have ever seen my website, there are a lot of projects I published over there.
Yes, and we'll give that address out for sure. And then, okay, so you're an electrical engineer, or just in the engineering field for work, and I'm assuming you kind of branched or combine that engineering experience with your ham radio experience and started working on this chip. So tell us a little bit about the TEF chip and kind of how you got started and where it's going.
Well, it was in the winter of 2020. We had those COVID lockdowns, and I had holidays, so nowhere to go. And it was for a few months, I was thinking about learning how to program with Arduino, but never had a project to work on, because yeah, everybody can let a LED blink, but yeah, you want more about it. And I noticed the TEF6686 chipsets on AliExpress a few months earlier. At that time, they were sold as snap-in tuners for Android car radios, and some hobbyists already started working on it. The most beautiful thing of the chip is that it has a very large instruction set. You can control almost everything in the chip. And as we all know, it's very sensitive, and selectivity is very good because of all those digital filters inside.
No, I think first getting my hands on this radio, and I think, you know, there were a lot of people, you know, in the specific to the FM DX community, this radio, you know, a lot of us got started on portable radios, you know, before, you know, maybe migrating to, you know, tuners connected to an external antenna, or obviously in the SDR era. But for me, thinking, you know, back to when I was younger, portable radios are where it was at. But there were always limitations to selectivity, sensitivity, those kind of things. And now in the 2010s, that has improved. Some of the I know that the Grundig G8 portable, for instance. So tying back into your background, Chef, had you done much FM DXing at all? I'd be curious. And sort of your experience with other portable radios, did the TEF chip kind of stand out for you as far as its performance goes?
Yeah, well, I started FM DXing when I was a very little boy. I can remember that. I had a radio at my room, and a wire at the ceiling, and receiving some German stations, and they had this German program, which I later learned that they had for minority, so people from South America, from Turkey. So I heard something about Panama, and I thought I can receive Panama on my on my FM receiver, but it was German. So
that's not what quite was, as exciting. Yeah, so
I was, I think, 7 years old or so. And later on, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, I had always had a portable radio with me. So everybody had a Walkman with a cassette inside. And I had some small radio, which I could connect to my headphones. And I can't remember 1 week. It was a very big Tropo opening. And I was able to receive all the BBC stations from England all week long on my portable in stereo without any noise. So, and that was, I think, the one with the one event that tipped me over into DXing. So later on, I used a Yagi and also all kind of receivers. But when you look into the schematics of those receivers, they are maybe different in controlling. That's more modern, digital readout, digital signal meters. But the basics on all those receivers which you buy for home use are still the same schematic setup. And so there is no difference. And later we learned that car radios, for some reason, were very sensitive and selectivity was very good. So, the chip manufacturers for car radio chips are way beyond those for home use because, when you drive, you have to eliminate multipath and have filtering, which is very sharp to make sure that you have the best listening experience, of course. And the TF chip is one of the latest in the time that it was only analog. Later, digital came in. So,
were people in the community working on the TEF before you got involved in the winter of 2020? Like, how long had that been adapted and turned into like a portable radio?
Yeah, there were people working on it, and they had made a script where you can control it with a command line on your PC, and also with the control program, which was already built by Conrad for the XDR GTK, so for the Sony XDR receivers. But that was it. There was no real finished design which could really work standalone. So that's what I want to make, because it wasn't there, and it was a challenge for me to do that.
Well, I will say, I think at least, I don't know, one out of every three DXers in the United States, I think it's certainly all the ones that have used portables, I think everybody has been switching to the TEF. And really what we've been seeing are all of these different sellers on, you know, we have one or two in Amazon in the United States, and then obviously lots and lots of options on purchasing the hardware on AliExpress. So, you know, given that you were kind of the person that pioneered putting it into, you know, the portable package, we don't do a video podcast, but I'm holding the one up that I have. How did it come to be that everybody started making these designs, and did you have, were, are you selling this, these radios?
I don't make any money of it. I'm just an hobbyist who started the project, published all open source. So maybe that's what did it. I made a short timeline for myself. Let's have a look. It was in the early days of 2022 that a Chinese hobbyist contacted me, and he created the first portable design. It was looked like the design you had in your hands, but without a speaker. And I think that was the trigger for the makers to make this as a portable radio, which came on eBay and AliExpress and so on.
Yes, I forgot eBay. Okay, so that's, and I'm assuming now there's just a variety of copycat manufacturers, and you don't really stay in touch with anybody who's manufacturing. You're just focused on the evolution of the chip and the firmware interfaces with the chip, right?
Yeah, correct. I had contact with a guy in China who modified the firmware to, what was it, version 1.18, you get it when you buy one, with the memory channels which don't work and and that kind of things, and the stripped medium wave range. But we he worked with me on the later versions. So what we did, I was invited by another guy from Czech Republic. He asked me, why don't we force hands? Because they all made their own fork. One had version 1.21 with that and that and that extra options, and the other one made 1.22. So everybody was working on it, but not together. So what we did is we joined all this Discord server and start working with each other. So there was a guy who was very good in designing GUIs and fonts for the characters, and so that was one guy. The other guy was our contact in China, so he had made it to make sure it was compatible with the hardware they made in China, and so on and so on. So, and that's why we started with version 2, because there were a lot of version 1.xx's.
Mm. Okay. And would you say that most of the manufacturers of them are on board with the 2.0 firmware? So if I go to AliExpress or eBay today, are you seeing that most have switched over to this, you know, kind of unified firmware that you're all working on together? Or are there still some old versions floating around out there?
Yeah, I see them coming with a version which was downloaded from our GitHub. I see them with a modified version, like the one version 1.18. And I've heard a lot of stories about different versions. I don't have any contact with those factories or those sellers, only sure. with one or two guys who did some development in China.
So that leads me to the question, I think. In fact, Nick, maybe you want to share your experience updating the firmware. I think it'll be a big question on the minds of listeners here about how do I update my firmware so my radio's, you know, on the latest and greatest.
That just this morning, I updated to 2.00.9, and I find it, you know, there, and I'll recommend specifically, I believe it's Mad Radio UK DXer has posted a couple tutorial videos just for flashing the firmware first using a Windows PC and going through the steps. It's a fairly, I think the biggest, you know, obstacle, Chef, is probably you need to locate the boot button within the headphone ports of your TEF radio. Just use a paper clip, probably is just or a very thin screwdriver. And you know, I can just say, and you could tell us about it more, but the firmware updates are fabulous. You know, as far as what you've been able to input in each of them. Maybe just take us through kind of like your process for like evaluating new features into each of the updates, things like AGC, some of the improvements that you've tried to put in each one of the firmware updates, and whether you're able to get, you know, feedback from users of the ease of installing each of the firmware updates. See, you know, for me, again, with the help of the one tutorial video, just because there are some drivers, I'll mention two specifically that you do need on your Windows PC just for it to recognize the TEF when you connect it. And then when you put it into that boot mode, then you can load the firmware. But maybe just take us through your process for deploying each of the firmware updates. I think that would be interesting for our listeners to hear.
Yeah, okay. Well, there are so many different radios. You have the one with the boot button in the headphone. I have one with the boot button at the side. I've seen ones with boot buttons inside, so you have to open the radio. There are even radios which have no boot button at all, but you don't need it on that one. So that's it depends on the hardware. So if you're not sure how to update, and maybe it's better to join the Discord group and just ask it, because there are almost every receiver which is out there, there are users over there who has one, so who have one. About the update, also I have to tell you, it's not possible to brick your device. I have many questions about it. You cannot.
I was worried myself. And it'll guide you, like the, you know, turn off your radio, then turn it back on, you know. So I was, you know, I wanted to be cautious, but there's no risk of, you know, irreparable harm. Is that correct?
No. Correct. Yeah. The ESP32 processor is very good at it. So there's a fixed system, update system in that, which you cannot break. So you can then end up with a radio, which is not working, but you can also always install the software again. If you failed, maybe ask a friend, but it's not possible that you break it. So that's okay. A good thing.
So if a firmware update fails, you would probably just end up needing to go back to whatever the original firmware version was that shipped with your hardware.
Yeah, or just ask somebody else who can help you with it.
Okay, and that, I feel like that's a good time. So what is the Discord server? Can you tell us a little bit about that community and how to join?
Yeah, maybe we can. You can put a link in the show notes.
Of course.
For it, well, it's currently we have users from all over the world, USA, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, even Australia. So it's a worldwide community. It's a fast-growing community, first for the TEF, and later on we just renamed it to Open Radio because it's now also about other devices.
Yes,
and we also
Yes, and you also, what were you saying?
Yeah, I wanted to say we even have this new web server ID launched a few weeks ago where you can share your radio with the world.
Okay, and I want to say one of our one of the members of our US FMDX club is actually hosting one from Connecticut. Nick, I don't know, did you see that from?
I saw there's a user in Florida. I believe that, and I'm not familiar with them, but I was checking out the FMDX web server earlier this morning, and it's really cool. It basically real time tuning. You see the RDS, and then the PI code, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask you, Chef, too. Even just in the version 2 firmware on the TEF, I've been amazed if you change it, and again, for our US listeners, you do have to change in the configuration the RDS from Europe to Americas, and then you'll see the call letters, for instance, even with some of the iHeartRadio stations here in the US that have the one in the first call letter character it goes back to like their traffic distribution or something. But the database knows, it converts to the correct call, whether it's, WDAS here in the Philadelphia area. So the RDS is great. And the same thing on the FMDX web server. So maybe Chef, two questions. Tell us more about FMDX web server, how easy that would be for any user with a TEF radio to set up and allow users to tune around. And then can you tell us, if you're able to, if it's, top secret, I understand, where the RDS data comes from? I know a couple folks Bryce and I converse with were curious, just because it seems so good. It's got some of the unique translator call letter conversions around the US too. So database, and talk about FMDX web server too more, because that seems to be a great project.
Yeah, okay. Maybe we kick off with the database. Well, I have found a converter online or the calculation, how to calculate PI to call sign. And I implemented that and in a better version. And I got some comment from some USA users. Well, it's not working because they do not use the right PIs over here. So, yeah, well, if they do not use the right PIs, then it won't work ever. And then one of those guys pointed me to a database on the internet. So we have made the complete database of all call signs and frequencies and PI codes and states. And then I was thinking, well, why don't we implement this complete database into the radio? So I asked him, well, if you can send me a list of all frequencies with PI codes, with the call sign and the state, then I will implement it. So there's a lookup database inside your radio. Mm. For example, when you're listening to 93.1, it looks up on all stations between on 93.1 and see if there's a match on the PI code. And if there is a match, then it will show you the call sign and the state. If it doesn't find it, then he will try to calculate it with the calculator. And it will show an extra question mark at the end. So you're not sure about it. So that's the way it works. And that's the reason why you see that when you update the radio, it's first formatting the system, because there are just files on, maybe you can see it as a very small SSD. It's just in the flash, but it's a RAM drive or SSD. They call it SPIFs. So on the ESP, where a complete database is inside, you even see it when you tune into a radio. Your radio freezes for half a second or so. Maybe you have ever noticed that.
Absolutely. That's and so in this case, there is within the radio, there is a database of some sort with all this PI code data that evaluates if 1CAD or whatever the PI code is, and it tries to make a match based on, and I know too, you could change it probably so that, I think the default setting is small errors for RDS, but you could change it to large errors or all errors. And that, as DXers probably know, because we deal with the same thing with SDRs, if you bring in more bogus PI codes, you might get more bogus decodes, but there's a chance that, probably a borderline signal, you might get that decode. But that's all being powered by this database. And I assume then, Chef, the only way it gets updated, let's say new stations sign on here in the US, it's just through subsequent firmware updates that database would get updated. Is that correct?
That is correct. The database can be found on my GitHub page. And if you have a station which is not inside the database, you're free to add it. Okay. It's not very difficult. And if you're not sure how to do it, or just send me an email or whatever, contact me, and I will add it to the list. As far as I know, there are also Canadian stations in the same list.
That's really, both Bryce and I, dabble in some developing, and I'd be curious. I did not explore on your GitHub the database, so I will take a look. But I just, again, just in use cases around here in the U.S. and in New Jersey and in my travels, it has been very impressive. And then also maybe if you could just speak to briefly, what you're able to do as far as PI code sensitivity, is that something you're able to control in the software? I say that just because it seems to be quite sensitive, a 25 dB signal sitting here in my room. If I attached the whip, with all the interference, this is a terrible environment for DX inside my house here. And yet, the results seem favorable. And I know other FMDXers have concurred. In terms of the RDS decode process, how much of that is software? How much of that is hardware? I guess my question is.
Well, you get the RDS data from the chip in four blocks, called block ABCD. And you get also an indication of the error level for each block. So that is how to determine if it's correct or not. That's also the setting for show RDS errors, none, small. So there you can set a threshold. So if you want to show it all, even when it's crap, then yeah, just set it to all. But you will get crap on low signals. So I also made an option just to set show PI errors, I guess it was. So when you get a PI in the RDS, but it has errors, then it will still show it, but with a question mark. So is it bad? Then it's one question mark. Is it really bad? Then there are two question marks. Mm. And once it had an errorless PI, then it won't show the error PIs anymore. So if you have a small burst, for example, meteor scatter, then you will get the PI. And most receivers cannot catch up with that.
Mm. Interesting.
We have tested it here with the meteor showers, and even when there was just about 100 milliseconds, we got the PI.
Wow.
If the signal level is okay, yeah. And the RDS decoder itself, that's completely built by myself. So I only get raw data from the chip itself.
Gotcha.
And so I guess differentiating, like, obviously, I'm just going to pick on the Sony XDR-F1HD, which I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, mm-hmm. has kind of a notoriously, obviously, it only decodes PS and it's relatively slow compared to the TEF and some of the SDR implementations. Is that a matter of the threshold for certainty of an errorless decode, or is that maybe like a bandwidth issue? I mean, what's your secret sauce for it being so sensitive? Is it more of the error checking side, or just something you've implemented on in software?
Yeah, well, I think companies like Sony do not want to have radios in the market where users are complaining that sometimes there's garbage on the display. Yeah. So they want to make sure that what they show is correct. And that takes some time. So the error level is probably at zero, and maybe a double check to make sure it's correct, while we can just put out everything we want. If you have a Sony XDR receiver, you can connect it with the XDR GTK after a small modification. And then you also have this fast RDS decoding. So it's just software from Sony. And I think it's just more like, a normal user don't want to see garbage on a display. It just should work as it should. So they do not interest about PI codes or whatever.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Where obviously when you were designing this, it was designed for DXers and listeners alike, but the more technically minded users. So speaking of more technically advanced users, you talked about the XDR GTK. Can you tell us a little bit? I think many listeners are probably not familiar with it, or maybe have like seen what the UI looks like on a YouTube video or something. Can you tell us more about the project and then what one would need to do to connect the TEF to their PC and use XDR GTK?
Yeah, well, XDR GTK was designed by Konrad. He's from Poland. In the time that there was no TEF around. So what the European DXs did was buying this Sony receiver, this XDR receivers from the USA, because they were not sold in Europe, because we don't have HD radio. But he came in the same problems you have, slow, no PI code. So he made an Arduino design where you can connect directly into the chip of the XDR receiver and then connect it to your PC. That was his design. So you can set another frequency, you get the RDS data, you can set the IF plus and the RF plus and so on. So just a software which was designed to control those XDR receivers. So what we did with the TEF was just make sure it's compatible with that software, because that was the software around, which can communicate with FM receivers, which can communicate with RDS bar, which can communicate with station list, which you can use to file a DX report on fmlist.org, and so on. So that's the software. Nowadays, yeah, it's a bit outdated, and we are working on a new protocol, also Conrad, to make it more efficient. Like, we can show the actual bandwidth and other details which were not available on the RxDR, but are available on the TEF and maybe on other receivers as other functions.
Okay, so this would kind of pull. So right now, XDR GTK was really built for the Sony, and it's adapted to the TEF. And where you're going in the future is that XDR GTK would kind of evolve to almost favor or have some new features specific to the TEF. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, I think there will be a new complete new program to control the receiver, but we want to make sure that we stay backwards compatible with that.
Okay. Sure, that's excellent. And then XDR DTK, if I'm understanding right, a lot of us in the States use RDS Spy with, you know, piping some MPX data out of our SDRs. I have heard that the XDR GTK can actually work with RDS Spy. Is that something you're familiar with? And
yeah, correct. Your TEF can also connect directly with RDS Spy.
Mm.
Just set the serial port to, you can choose between XDR GTK and RDS Spy. And if you set it to RDS Spy, then you just start up your RDS Spy and connect it with your TEF. It works. You don't need a cable.
Okay, so I'm going to ask an ignorant question. So when one would connect your TEF to, say, a PC, would it be using the USB-C port that it charges with, or would you have to open up the case and connect some leads? How does the connection between TEF and PC work?
It's just over the same USB connector which you use to update the software.
Okay, great. So it's almost like plugging your digital camera into your computer for those of us who are around for that.
It even can work over Wi-Fi.
Wow. Okay.
So also XDR GTK and RDS Spy can even work over Wi-Fi with the TEF. Problem is that most Chinese receivers have a metal case and the antennas inside, so the Wi-Fi range isn't that good. But
works. Okay. All right. I didn't even know there was a Wi-Fi transceiver inside the box with the TEF.
I see that little Wi-Fi icon, you know, in the top, you know, when you like first turn on the radio or, mm-hmm. but I was not sure. Do like the silver TEF models, are they Wi-Fi capable?
All TEFs are Wi-Fi capable because it's in the ESP32. The question is, did they add a Wi-Fi antenna inside?
Mm.
And if they did, is it capable of leaving the metal casing? So my first design was DUI, so you have an open PCB and not a metal casing, so you were able to connect an external Wi-Fi antenna. But yeah, I'm not sure how Chinese will fix that. It was not Wi-Fi was not in the software when they started copying the radio.
Very interesting.
So we added that later on.
So if one wanted, you know, talking more about kind of our technically advanced listeners, if someone wanted to buy just like a PCB, you know, kind of a board implementation without the metal case and set it up DIY, or maybe it's a little less expensive, where would one source that? Does someone sell just kits with lower level parts without all the opinionated cases and external buttons and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there was a kit available from a web shop from the Netherlands, but I'm not sure if they still sell it. You can let a Chinese factory make the PCB and just get the parts yourself. The files you need for the PCBs, the Gerber files, are on my website and are free to download. Mm. And for the design with a touchscreen, I also made a design for a touchscreen, the Nexteon. There are even links on my website to PCBWay, where you can click on and they just say pay and then you will get the PCBs.
Okay, so that sounds like the easiest option, probably.
Yeah. If you are building one radio, you will get a minimum 5 PCBs. So maybe you can do it with a few friends. I think that's the easiest way to do, because when you are buying for all parts for one radio, maybe it's not the cheapest solution.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. So, kind of talking a little bit more about the future or where you see this project going. So first of all, are you still actively involved in creating new firmware? Is this still a project that's pretty high on your radar, just as a personal project? Or how do you see your involvement moving forward?
Yeah, it still is. But I think the radio part is maybe finished. What can we add more? So we sometimes get requests from users. Why can't you add this or this or that or change this? And we look into it. If it's possible and if it's usable, then we can do it. So you have the released version is version 2.00. That's still the latest stable release. But all the versions like the 2.00.1, 0.2, 0.3, all development versions, so they can contain bugs. And currently we are working on nicer skin design. And this new communication protocol, which we are working on, and of course the compatibility with the web control function. If you want to have your TEF online, maybe I can tell you something about that. It's not the web server is not inside your TEF, so you need a PC or a Raspberry Pi or something like that. Mm. You can connect the audio out from your receiver to the audio card and connect the radio to control it. And the software is very easy to install and to configure. It can also be found on GitHub, FMDX web server. It's called
FMDX web server. Yeah, I'm looking at that right now, and we'll put a link to that GitHub for the web server, your GitHub, and some of the other resources in the show notes. But yeah, within that GitHub, I think there's pretty good documentation on getting it started, and I know some. The person in Florida who I don't know that we're familiar with, and then I believe there's a new one I was getting at it earlier from Connecticut in the United States, actually Mike B, our the leader of one of our FMDX groups in the United States. So I know some people have been implementing it, and certainly American DXers, if you want to reach out to someone who knows, I'm sure Mike of Connecticut would be willing to help. So
You can go to list.fmdx.pl. Then you get a map of the world where all current online receivers. And there's one in Chile and one in England. We have two or three in Norway where they stopped FM broadcasting. So they have a clean band. So cool. If there's any sporadic E, they will pick it up.
It will get through. That's
They completely switched to DAB. There are some local stations, but they power for 50 watts or 100 watt max.
Briefly on that too, obviously not something, you know, US related, but certainly for our European listeners, what is the current status of DAB compatibility with the TEF? There is support. Is that correct?
There is no DAB reception inside the TEF. So,
okay.
But what I did, I built a DAB receiver that was a project for the last weeks or so. I made a nice video on my YouTube page about it, and I connected it with the TEF. So I made a combi receiver with two receivers inside, but it acts like one. So you can choose FM, AM, or DAB.
Wow.
But there is no real DAB or any digital receiver inside. It can so, output on some chips. It can output the IQ data to an external coprocessor, as they call it. But this technique was already left a few years ago, so there's no development on NXP on it anymore.
Okay, so I think Nick and I must have watched your video tuning at some of those UHF frequencies. So that was just an experiment that you were doing that had a second internal chip.
I don't know, this UHF is used in the ham radio world and in the pirate scene in the Netherlands. We have a pirate band in the gap for the cell phones at 870 megahertz. And we have the ham bands on 430 megahertz. So I made a complete converter which you can just snap on the TEF, and then you can select those UHF bands. So it's mainly a Dutch thing to have.
Okay. got it. And that does, there's some extra hardware that's in the box.
Yeah, just an additional hardware you need for that. Yeah, correct.
Well, very good. So I guess just maybe touching back on future plans, are you actively working on any development or getting development to prod for additional firmware releases, or are you kind of done right now and focusing efforts on some of the XDR and communication interfaces and some of that?
Yeah, we're currently more working on the skins. Yeah, I just heard that one of you had updated the radio. You can try to select in the menu the skin and select top secret. I guess I call it top secret. And then you will see a complete new menu design. So we want to make the radio more fancy to see and to use. So you can select a complete other design for the display.
What firmware version do you need for that? Is that 2.0.0 or is it one of the development versions?
Yeah, it's a development version, the latest one, 2.0.0.9, I guess. So
okay.
top secret there.
Yeah, and then press OK.
All right, let's take a...
And then you will see that the menu changes completely for design. It's more modern look.
I can... Yeah, no, that's... So now... you know, when you go in to check audio settings, display settings, RDS settings, it is. I feel like it's a bit easier to navigate with that skin. So that would just be pertaining to the menus, correct?
Yeah, but also to the GUI. We can change the looks and feels of the radio for each skin, so. The last few months I had a lot of work on my DAB project, and now I'm returning back to TEF and adding those functions. But that's a lot of work to do because have to work with pictures and backgrounds and gradients and.
It really becomes more, you know, if you think in terms of development front end versus back end. But for something like this, like that would be more. Like you kind of have to do both because obviously there's the you know, whether it's RDS decodes, signal readings, all those kind of things that work with the chip. Then like when you're working with a skin, that is very much more front end. Does that sort of become like two separate processes for you? And do you have a preferred, you know, do you like working more with, you know, chip facing you know, modules, or, you know, do you enjoy like enhancing the skin, you know, doing those kind of things with
I like to challenge myself, so it doesn't matter if it's chip related or GUI related, front end, back end. This front end design or back end design or how do you call it, I was not familiar with it, how to do it, and I tested it with my DAB project, how to make it look like a fancy professional radio which you can buy in the store.
Yeah.
And, I learned my lessons on it, and now I want to implement it on TAF. So that's, I contacted awesome. my graphical design guy from Discord. He's very good in making fonts and backgrounds and so on. So we're working together on it right now. So he's sending me the files Do you like this menu background with this selector? And then I will implement it, send it back to him, and ask him, is this how it should look? So that's what we are working on. But well, we have to make sure that we stay within the memory limits, because the ESP only has 4 megabytes to store it. So
that is,
we have three megabytes. We have 3 megabytes available, because the other part is used for the USA call sign database.
Wow, that's look at what we're taking up.
So new features might come at the expense of American RDS data.
No.
Okay.
We won't offer old features. Well, we had with 2.0, we had those new fonts with those fancy frequency numbering. First, it was this old 8-digit font you remember from your alarm clock and so on. And we changed it to a new, and then we get complaints because people want the old one back. So we added 4 or 5 different fonts. Yeah, even Comic Sans. So,
oh my goodness. Okay, all right.
I could just, with what you get, for what these are priced, even if you factor in, and I know, and the other thing I want to mention too is I believe it's Nubish has the TF guide, and we'll link that again, also part of this open radio Discord. When we first learned about it, Bryce and I and other American DXers, obviously paying for shipping, and now you can get it from Amazon, but for under $200, like what you can get in these radios, like I can't underscore it enough, like thinking about like 12-year-old me using one of the shortwave Sony portables, or like what I would have done for a radio like this, it's really amazing, like what and what the firmware brings. I think all of us DXers are so grateful. Part of your community, Chef, maybe you could talk about that TF guide and just related, how many like active developers, including yourself, are working on, I know there's like the FMDX map, that the transmitter maps, that seems like a very active project too. I've seen referenced on the Discord. How many total developers are sort of, active, at least in this whole open radio community that?
Yeah, well. Well, you mentioned Nubish. Nubish is the creator of the web software. He also recently made a TEF buy guide. So he made an overview of all available TEFs he found on the internet and made a list of pros and cons of it. So you can use it to choose your design.
We will definitely link that in the show notes.
And he made the map, so you can choose which web radio you want to web TEF you want to listen to, so that's he did a very good job, and it's still developing it. Maybe one hint: if you have it installed and you receive a station which is unknown or you don't know, just click on the PI, then the map opens with a signal path to the origin station. And the map thing is I think it's more Conrad's thing. I think he synced it with fmlist.org, with the database, to get it working. And I read that he recently added all Australian transmitters in it. So we now need a complete list of USA and Canadian transmitters. Then we can add it too, because the Florida guy has an empty map. So there.
I think we can talk to you about that. So that could be a good topic for us.
It might,
you can supply it.
That's a behind the scenes VHF DX podcast conversation.
Got
a few ideas for that. This is I encourage all of our listeners to check it out, and it also seems like that there's even a a community, some DXers sharing reports of tropo conditions going over there in the open radio Discord. So seems, more European. But it seems, I think you're over like 500 active Discorders. That's great because I think this is something we've talked about on the podcast. There's so many because there's so many places where DXers can congregate. It's hard to get them all in one place. But this seems like a very active, vibrant community. So that has to make you pleased. I feel like.
Yeah, that's very, very nice to see. Before I started with this project, I even didn't know about any that the FMDX community was that big. I thought maybe I was the only one in the world who likes to receive stations which are not close by, but it's a very big world, and we help each other. And one is more of antenna building and making the nicest DX, and the other one is more doing hardware design. And there's a guy who's good at software, and when he got stuck on something, he asked, "I'm stuck on this. We can help." And there's another guy who knows how to help him, and so it's a very nice and good community. It's a good old forum feel you have in it, and that's yeah. It's and there's also a guy who does medium wave, so let him report medium wave reports. We had one who traveled to South Korea, and he took his staff with him. And when he left the hotel, he said, "What if I share my receiver with you with the web server? Then you can tune over the band in Korea." So it's a very good thing to have, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Excellent. Well, I think we're kind of closing up our time. Thank you so much for the conversation today. So obviously we're going to put everything in the show notes, but if someone just wanted to learn more about you, Chef, would you recommend a website, your GitHub? Like, where would be the one-stop shop to find you on the internet?
Yeah, I've my GitHub page. It's github.com/ and then my amateur call sign. That's Papa Echo 5, Papa Victor Bravo. Same for my website, www.papaecho5papavictorbravo.nl. And YouTube, I also have a YouTube channel where I sporadic post something. Yeah, you just have to search for my name and my call sign, then you will get it. Or just search for TF6686, and I think one or two videos I made in the early days are watched that many times that they will pop up on the top of the search, and then you can get to my channel. And I sometimes, when I do, for example, now I made this DAB receiver, I made some videos about it, how to build one, and did some sneak previews of the screens and so on.
Very good. Well, thank you, Chef Verhoeven, for joining us today on the VHF DX podcast from the Netherlands.
No
We will
problem.
catch you next time. 73.
Okay, cheers.